Hi, everybody, to the monthly forum call with the Institute for Life Coach Training. This is Dr. Pat Williams, the founder of ILCT, and I love doing these monthly forums. I will say, exciting bit of news for those of you who are here live, which Amy can see in the background, you will be eligible for CEUs now for these calls. So for those of you listening on the recording, enjoy the recording, but you had to be here live to get the CEUs. So welcome, those of you that are on the call today. I'm excited that we have so many signed up and interested. You are in mute right now so that we cut out any background noise. So if you're trying to say hi and nobody say anything, that's why. At some point later in the call, before the top of the hour, we may be able to unmute and take some live questions. But I'm going to give you some content, some thoughts, some things I've written about working with a shadow in many different ways. And then we have some questions that students sent in, too. But I just want to say that in my graduate education in psychology, so way back in the dark ages when I was in college, I ended up getting my master's in humanistic psychology and my doctorate in transpersonal psychology and graduated in 1977. So I studied a lot of Carl Jung and Acioli and Maslow and Rogers and Fritz Perls, a lot of humanistic therapists rather than Freud. I studied Freud, but I wasn't really enlivened by Freud. So I enthusiastically engulfed myself in the theories and writings of Carl Jung, the Swiss psychoanalyst whom I shared his love of the transpersonal views of human nature and the theories of higher consciousness. So Jung, to me, was able to express the human condition without really ignoring the spiritual aspect or higher realms of consciousness or what Maslow, before his death, called the farther reaches of human nature. And I think that one of the least esoteric principles of his theories, he had a lot of very difficult theories to understand, and we, of course, don't need to teach depth psychology, but one that has influenced generations of therapists, consultants, self-help teachers, and seekers in human growth is the concept of the shadow. The shadow side of our personality for many, I believe, is wrongly accused of holding only our deep, dark secrets or human tendencies to be other than good and gracious. Now, we know we all have a dark side, and we all have memories that may be painful or hurtful, and we've got them buried away under lock and key somewhere, and maybe we've worked through issues. But, you never really forget. You just find a place to put it where it doesn't pop up and bite you anymore. And certainly as my work as a therapist, I worked a lot with people's shadow or unresolved issues that had been buried away, but that's not what we do in coaches necessarily. They may pop up, but we work with them in a different way. In fact, we use them. We don't work with them. We find that with a way to reframe and learn from positive psychology principles of, so what can you learn from that, et cetera. The shadow, though, also holds all that can be brilliant and creative aspects of ourself if we let some light shine on it, allowing really a more complete and authentic human experience. I'm in the process of writing a book for the general public, and I've got an agent helping me with the final polishing of a book proposal that originally I was calling Naked Living, Uncovering the Authentic Self. I'm going to shift it to probably Emotional Nakedness, Uncovering the Authentic Self, because I made the mistake I made the wise move of Googling Naked Living, and boy, I did not like the first 8 or 10 pages that came up. So I'm changing the title. But in that book, I'm really promoting the premise that to be totally whole, to be really whole, we have to be willing in the right place, at the right time, with the right people, in a trusting situation, be able to share some of the stuff that we haven't said before, that we haven't seen, parts of our memories, personalities, aspirations, et cetera. Now, I'm not talking about, big, deep, dark, let it all out sort of stuff, but it is important, like in Brené Brown's work today on courageous living and her talk about wholeheartedness, and Debbie Ford's work before she passed away on the shadow, a lot of times it was stuff that we had shame and hurt to it. But I'm also saying that our authentic living, the brilliance that each human being can bring to their place in humanity, their place in the world and society and family, et cetera, needs also to be revealed, and not just to ourself in journaling or thinking, but out loud to another caring person. And guess what? Sometimes that person is a coach, because you can help people understand all aspects that may be part of their shadow self. So let's look at that a little deeper. Perhaps that's one of the least understood and most powerful concepts in personal and spiritual development, is the shadow. Now, in the world of self-help, which I sometimes call shelf help, and of course now I'm writing a book for that, or so-called experts or dime a dozen, and here's the, you know, seven secret ways to unveil, blah, 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 blah. There is a lot of useful information. There are some books that rise to the top, and consumers are always eagerly lapping up cliched and sometimes useless advice, but also the ones that seem to give good advice and last over time. There is a concept that doesn't receive a lot of attention that perhaps is the most powerful idea in all of self-help, and I call it your shadow self. And here's the deal. Either you own your shadow or it owns you. You can try to ignore it, hide it, or deny it, but until you embrace and make friends with it, you will be missing the key to optimal living. Because I found over time that oftentimes the things we're afraid of sharing with somebody, and maybe first sharing with ourselves, usually aren't as bad as we made them out to be. I mean, they're just not as devastating as we thought. And so I use, instead of the popular phrase you might hear, the process of elimination, when people have an idea of getting rid of stuff, we say the process of elimination. And I instead like to say that shadow work is the process of illumination, that it's really a process of shining light on that we haven't realized, that we haven't known, that we haven't expressed. So it may be even unknown to us. Here's an analogy I use, or I guess maybe it's a story really, that I think fit it metaphorically, and that's the 1953 film of Peter Pan. I have very vivid memories of watching that a dozen times in my younger years. And in the film, some of you may have seen it, or maybe you've seen remakes in a sense, or the Broadway play perhaps. While Peter was visiting the Darling household to listen to the oldest daughter read bedtime stories, Wendy, the Darling's dog, Nana, barked at the intruder, and while Peter escaped, his shadow was captured. And she shut the windowsill, and his shadow was caught. So that night, Wendy Darling discovered Peter's shadow and stored it in her drawer, folded up neatly to prevent it from getting into trouble. Now, isn't that an interesting metaphor? Here's Peter Pan's shadow, and it's being put away to prevent it from getting into trouble. The next night, Peter and Tinkerbell returned to retrieve it, and when they found it, they accidentally woke Wendy. As Peter attempted to restore it with soap and get it to stick to his body again, Wendy preferred the proper way and sewed it back on. So I think that's a great story that, when I titled this talk, Your Shadow, Don't Leave Home Without It, well, you can't anyway. It is with you. So it seems that Peter Pan's shadow and him both have a playful personality, but before it was reattached to Peter, the shadow had frequently played with Peter Pan in this cartoon/movie/play by being separated and teasing him. Now think of that metaphorically. You know, it's like this parts of ourselves that we don't know or that we've got hidden away tease us and bug us and played with us. So after being sewed back on, the shadow is now a part of Peter. This is, of course, the same time of play where Peter is supposed to be maturing, even though he doesn't want to grow up and live in Never Never Land forever. So there are many ways to view this metaphor of the shadow, but suffice it to say that we're not complete if not integrated with our shadow, reattached for permanence and not in a slippery way that will deny the integration of our personality, or what Jung called individuation, the process of psychological and spiritual integration, to feel like an integrated human being, which comes over time. Most of Jung's writing, he talked about the 40s, 50s, and 60s of someone's life being when that mostly occurred. you know, we've lived our young life, we've lived some of our foibles and troubles, and we get to the point where we can focus more on our integration of different aspects of ourselves. Jung considered individuation, when we bring everything together, the integration, as a solution to what he considered one of the major problems facing people: how to link up consciousness to the unconscious, to bring our ego mind or consciousness into a working relationship with our inner terra incognito, or our unknown inner terrain, which has the concept of a shadow. Now, there's one other way I want you to think about this, and I know this is a lot of talking on my part, but I'm setting the groundwork for fitting this into coaching. There's also the concept of masks, and Joseph Campbell, who wrote Hero with a Thousand Faces and did a PBS series on the power of symbols based on Jung's work, so he's kind of a follower of Jung and chronicled and cataloged many things over the years of Jung's studies, talked about masks. And then an actual real mask in cultures. What did masks represent? The story of Wizard of Oz, Star Wars, King Arthur, The Hobbit, Harry Potter, Homer's Odyssey, they're all about a hero's journey, which is also part of the quest of any human being and why those stories are so palpable for us. They include a mythical journey that includes rites of passage of the hero, his quest, the magic elixirs or swords or lightsabers, and finding their way back home in the end. That's the way back to the self, but with something that's changed. So Campbell's thinking runs parallel to that of Jung, who wrote of archetypes, of universal symbols and themes and characters that often show up in the dreams of people. And in psychoanalytic work, then, the shadow was investigated through dreams, through writing, through active imagination, through guided imagery, etc. A lot of those techniques we can use in coaching, because you have to keep in mind and underscore this, we're not working on putting an emotionally fragile person back together or exploring the depths of angst and depression, and that we're working with people to want to have live a more authentic life. I mean, even if it's business coaching, you're going to get into the whole person conversation at some point. But the reason we call it life coaching, of course, is you're working with the whole person. So it's important to not forget also that the shadow, seen only as dark and scary parts, denies the wonderfully unique aspects of our unique birth and place on this planet, and the gifts, dreams, and aspirations that we bring with us or discover along our journey. So in my coaching, I often ask my clients if there is a dream they've given up on. That's an early question. It might even be a question I put in the intake packet at times. Is there any part of a dream you once had that you feel you've given up on? Because I can tell you some stories of how that opened the conversation and the coaching to rediscovering ways that they could find that dream again. And I'll get to that in just a bit. So too often, we've created a view that we must have something wrong with us. And I think instead, we want to ask clients that, what greatness in you is unspoken? What greatness or uniqueness in you is undiscovered? Human development, in my view, is more about discovering than it is about uncovering and recovering. I mean, we might uncover things and learn things, but, you know, the old psychotherapy was to have people uncover things and get to an understanding and then recover and get back to normalcy. And coaching is really about not settling for mediocrity and trying to find out what uniqueness about you has yet to be realized. So what used to be personal archaeology and digging up and reburying our deep secrets and the narrative we live with, I instead want to shed light on the positive and unrealized aspects of people, including myself. That's part of my own work, too. Come out into the light. Your shadow's with you all the time, even when the sun is not shining. You just can't see it. Perhaps that's what enlightenment is, shining the light on what could be rather than what was. Way back in the oh gosh, I don't know when this might have happened. I guess when I was in college in the 70s in my undergraduate work, my dad gave me a book called The True Believer by Eric Hoffer. Eric Hoffer became a pretty well-known American philosopher, but he was actually a dock worker, unionized dock worker, I think in like Ohio or maybe Pittsburgh or possibly New York, I don't remember. But he was a great thinker and wrote some books, and this one was True Believer, which was published in 1951, has become widely recognized as a classic and got critical acclaim. But here's a quote that stuck with me and I've kept with me for many years. In fact, this quote is also in the Becoming a Professional Life Coach that you read for the foundational course at ILCT. Eric says, "Our greatest pretenses are built up not to hide the evil and the ugly in us, but our emptiness. The hardest thing to hide is something that is not there." Now, let me read that again. "Our greatest pretenses are built up not to hide the evil and the ugly in us, but our emptiness. The hardest thing to hide is something that is not there." So let that quote resonate for a while. We come with a belief to coaching that everyone is whole, capable, creative, and resourceful. That's our mantra, right? And if you really believe the people you work with, and you've got to believe this, have a unique purpose, message, meaning, raison d'etre, whatever it may be, and you impart that enthusiasm and belief to them, then they're not going to have emptiness. They're going to have wisdom come from the shadow part of their personality or the part that they don't yet know or have recognized. So the shadow is comprised of those aspects of yourself that are hidden away in the dark out of your everyday awareness. And remember, things hidden in the dark don't mean they're dark and evil. They're just in the dark. They're just out of the light. Many of these aspects of self have grips on your life and actually impact your thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and actions. Sometimes we use a metaphor like that of a secret cave in which you keep those parts of yourself that on an unconscious level you prefer to avoid and ignore. And, you know, I realize we all may have some of those or we've worked through some of those. We may have events that happen in our life, whether it be grief or loss or shame or some occurrence. That, you know, we're human. We have things happen to us. Life happens. So the shadow does include our deepest fears and regrets and judgments, et cetera, and truths about our life, about others. But it also has your greatest strengths, your dreams, and your sacred and divine self. In other words, the shadow includes all these things about yourself that you don't know that you don't know. So you don't know what you don't know, or those things that reside in your subconscious. In the act of coaching, we ask a lot of powerful questions, and sometimes they're more powerful than others. I mean, you can ask, what is it you really want? That's a powerful question. But ask a different way after a few bits of conversation, like, what is it you really want? The client may pause and say, well, you know, I've never told anybody this, but now that is part of coming from the shadow. So why is it important to embrace and explore that? With the understanding that everyday life includes relationships, career, money, et cetera, and that's a reflection of our inner state, the shadow does have a great impact on our life and choices. Coaching is about helping clients respond to life, to see choices that they have rather than react to life and make it, you know, automatic behavior. Ignoring or avoiding your shadow is like knowing that a part of you is missing, but fearing that it's too scary or too overwhelming to let out of the castle. Yet befriending your shadow is like cracking the code and revealing the programming that dictates your thoughts and your feelings and your actions, and eventually what you manifest and the outcomes that show up in your life. The shadow may include an unconscious vow to never have more money, that you always have to live poor, or that you're not going to succeed. And we know that in positive psychology research today and emotional intelligence and others, that as people start to live what they believe, they will begin to see it. As you believe positive thoughts, it's more likely that those thoughts can lead to actions that lead to manifestation. So can you see how much energy is put into keeping yourself small? And although it does serve you or maybe keep you safe and protected at certain times, can you also see how much of your life force may be suffocated at times? So here's a few ways to shine a light on shadow, and you can encourage clients to do this. You can think about this and how you might weave it into coaching conversations. Keep it in mind that, remember, we don't treat our clients for things they think are wrong with them. We're not working with shame or guilt directly, although that may come up as a block to growth. And if we normalize it and give the clients ways to embrace and integrate that aspect of themselves, then we serve the client well. So here's number one way. Examine any negative patterns that show up and look for these deep-rooted reasons for these patterns. They're so-called, if we turn down our volume a little bit, we say, why is that a fault? Why do I see that as a fault? What can I learn from that aspect of my personality, and how can it be repurposed? For example, a person who is extra careful about spending money to the point of deprivation may turn down the volume on that behavior and actually bring it to being responsible with money. So the behavior can be good. It's just overdone. It's over-exaggerated. Being responsible is an asset, while deprivation is a negative pattern that won't serve the person very well. You can ask yourself or journal about the following. What is my earliest memory of a pattern that you think you have? Maybe you're overly fastidious, or maybe you're overly messy, or maybe you think you're disorganized. Other way, say, how can that behavior message be turned down, and what part of that can be useful with the reins pulled in appropriately? Here's another way, number two. Take advantage of challenging times and crises to identify and embrace shadow aspects of yourself. This is the hardest part, but it's been the most glorious part in my life, because stuff does happen, whether it's health concerns or a death you didn't expect in the family or a divorce or an accident or financial loss, whatever it might be. If you read stories of success, you'll find out after the original settling into the reality, is now what? Now what can I do with the reality that faces me? Challenging times and crises such as unemployment, breakups, financial difficulties may bring light to more vulnerable parts of ourselves. And it's natural to do that. But eventually, you have to say, hey, I'm not alone. Other people have been through this. There's some stories of success. Here's some ways I can get out of this. Here's ways I recreate myself. And then there's another third way about working with the shadow in your own life is think of it as a higher self. Ask your higher self, your spirit, or whatever you converse to that's in this other realm to reveal those aspects that affect your life that you're not seeing. Simply asking whatever you believe may have part of your inner truth revealed to you can be very powerful. Now, this can be done through meditation, journaling, music, guided imagery, breath work. It can be part of your religious beliefs, or it can just be part of a philosophy of understanding the other aspects of yourself. Whatever. Be prepared to get some answers through insights, memories. You might have dreams, imaginations. If you do any work with metaphor, there's a lot of picture card things that are out there now in coaching. I'm trained in it. In the aspect called points of you, Y-O-U, the coaching game. You use photographs to stimulate the right brain for people. What does this picture signify to you as you look at it? And that's not a Rorschach test, but it's here's a photograph of something neutral and different people react to it in different ways. So you can do any of those kind of work. And I recommend all my clients that they find a time of the day when they do self-time, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, do you read something inspirational, do you meditate, do you listen to calming music, do you take a walk in nature, what kind of ritual or practice do you have that is for quieting the mind and just hearing that inner conversation, because that's where you might hear the shadow, and of course in my work, it's meant to be What messages might you be getting or thinking that's not being realized? What are you learning that you didn't know? What wants to be said that you're not saying? What have you begun to see that you didn't see before? And some of my questions in coaching, of course, get to that. So one more thing I'd like to talk about, and then I want to look at some questions, and then we'll open it up to some questions too. There's two ways to look at shadow work and coaching. So all that I've said about the psychological, personal, and spiritual aspects of shadow, I hope was enlightening. But here's how you incorporate it into work. So you can do shadow work and coaching after you've developed trust with a client and by just asking for them to have an opportunity to reveal things they've not said to others or they've not thought about out loud or they haven't shared. Like the big dream that if money were not an issue, what would you really be doing? If a genie came out of the bottle today and you got the one wish that you would want, what would that be? How does that show up? This doesn't have to be, you know, deep emotional conversation. You can simply ask a client, so tell me, now that we've worked together for a few weeks, I often like to ask people, so is there anything in your life that you've always thought of doing or being or wanting to reveal in some way that hasn't been shared? What was an early dream you might have given up on or an early dream you had, and how does it show up in your life today? And I'll give you one quick example. I remember a client I had pretty early in my coaching career. She was an older executive at a plant in Fort Collins at Hewlett-Packard in Colorado. And, you know, she was actually looking at some legacy coaching. She was the head of a team, but she knew she only had a couple years to retirement, and she had lost her husband. And so short story is this. When I asked her once what was a dream that she'd long given up on, what was something she really was passionate about as a young person, and it was dance. And she said, but of course, that's out of my life now. And I said, well, what if it's not? Well, no, I can't be in ballet now, or I can't be in a dance troupe like I wanted to be. Well, I'm not so sure. I mean, I had no idea where I was going with this, but I said, what if there's a way that dance and music could be part of your life? Would you be willing to explore it? And somehow I gave her an assignment to look at what was available in the community, community education and things like that. And if you want to fast forward about 6 months, she found some other women in their late 60s who were trying to get into this dance, move to music, I think it was called. And they got together and decided to form a dance troupe that would go to homes of the elderly and nursing homes and perform. And they got quite good. They did a little tap like they used to do. They did a little ballet within the ability that they could, and it brought such joy to her life that became a big part in her retirement, and then she started teaching what she could to dance to younger kids, just being kind of a coach on the side. Now, I never knew that was going to happen. I didn't know what was available, but we wanted to explore how could it be realized? How could that aspect that used to love to do dance and be part of that still show up today in her life? So the second way, so that's one way you use shadow work, is by asking for those unrevealed parts. The second way is a little different twist, and it's what I use a lot with executive coaching. I've been trained actually by a good friend named Donna Carlin in Winnipeg, Canada, who teaches shadow coaching. And when I get an executive assignment, I shadow that client for a full day. In other words, I walk with them, I go to meetings with them, I sit in the back of their office, I observe everything they do during the day, and then when we're walking down the hallway, I'm like their shadow, giving them feedback, observations, here's what I noticed. We might take a lunch break and debrief what I noticed of what went well, what didn't. I mean, all based on the goals we're working on. But I'm kind of like their shadow. And one guy even introduced me like that at a government team meeting. I said, you can tell him I'm your executive coach because it's pretty cool. You've been allowed to hire a coach. And he said, Pat's like my shadow. He's going to be back there in the back of the room. And I had to chuckle because he didn't know that that's what I was trained in. But that is indeed a real positive way to do it. It's kind of a shadow coach. You know, you're there following them around, observing, bringing things into the light, et cetera. All right. So I've heard a lot of rings. A lot of people have come onto this call. Welcome, welcome. I want to go through some questions that people sent in, and then I think I'll be able to open the lines and see what comments people might have on the speaking that I did. Judy writes, how might we integrate this understanding through questions that we might ask our coaching clients? What are some specific questions? You know, I mean, I've got a sheet here called 569 Powerful Coaching Questions, and I looked through those and I thought, that just becomes like a cookbook. The best recipes, you just kind of know what to do. The best questions come from the conversation that you're having. So you want to ask questions that are open, of course, powerful, but you might ask questions that are going to lead to the client saying something they've never said before. So instead of saying something like anything else or can you tell me more, which are, you know, I mean, tell me more is a yes, no. So would you share more about that? You can ask questions about, is there any part of this goal that you have or this challenge that you have that seems to relate to another time in your life? Or what comes to mind when you think about this success you're trying to achieve? You know, what you're trying to get at is any understanding that comes from what they haven't yet known, what they haven't yet realized. It doesn't have to be deep and dark. When I've worked with a client long enough, Judy, I actually tell them. I mean, I will share with some concepts, with some clients, this concept of the shadow. Almost everybody in society has heard about it. If you've done any reading on self-help and personal work and seen Brené Brown and Debbie Ford's work and a lot of some TED Talks even, there is talk about the shadow, but it's misunderstood. So that actually leads to another person, Laura, who writes, as a coach, should we share our shadows with the client if the client's situation would be improved by doing so? Laura, this is a great question because even in psychology, being trained in humanistic psychology and in some techniques did allow the therapist to even share. You always had to be careful that you weren't making the therapy session your session, but if you can share something that would be energizing and revealing to a client, almost normalize their situation, I have no problem with that. So in coaching, if you can share some learning that you've had from discovering parts of yourself that had not come out into the light, or if there's some helpful aspect that you can share, what you don't want to do is get into Me Too and say, oh, yeah, that's where I get stuck in that too, and I'm always finding this and that. No, then it becomes a blah, blah conversation, not a coaching conversation. So I think it's a great question. You can share things that you've learned from maybe how when you were coached or in the learning that you got in our classes. What did you learn about yourself that surprised you? What something are you doing today that you never would have done if someone then asked the right question? So, yeah, given those kind of examples, that's great. Now, Rania asked, apologize if I'm not pronouncing that right, how can we help our clients to discover the something side of their shadow? I guess I'm going to say the all positive. I'm sure that meant positive. By asking questions about that. You know, what dreams have you given up? What's something you always wanted to do or have that you don't? If you were by yourself and thinking about an opportunity that you'd like to have, what would it be? What time in your life did you feel the most powerful and most purposeful that you've ever felt? What Maslow called peak experiences. Those are glimpses of when we feel totally integrated. So, you know, questions like that. Joanne asked, will the topic include any references to the MBTI, which is the Myers-Briggs? You know, it's interesting. The Myers-Briggs personality assessment is based on a lot of Jung's theories. Myers and Briggs, who developed it, and that's why I've always liked the assessment. It's very positive. It doesn't have negative aspects like the MMPI or some of the psychological exams. But I don't have any references particularly to the shadow with the Myers-Briggs, except this. Any personality assessment, whether it be the Myers-Briggs or the DISC or the people map that we teach at ILCT, you always have all aspects of that assessment. Your strengths may be, like, I'm an ENFP, so my top personality type is to be extroverted, intuitive, et cetera. But I also can access the part of me that's introverted. In fact, at this stage of my life, I jokingly told somebody a few weeks ago, I was so extroverted for so long, I think I'm full. And now I really like my quiet time, going to the beach, being at home with just my wife, looking at the beauty. I don't need to go to cocktail parties anymore. I don't join things. So I don't do a lot of extroverted activities now, even though that's my general tendency. So I guess I could say that that was a part of my shadow that I covered up in my youth and young adult years. I mean, I used to think I wasn't a whole person if I didn't have other people around me. I had to be connected, belong, around groups, lead groups, be part of all kinds of things. I was like overcooked on joining and leading. So I think that's what I would say about that. If you use the MBTI, you certainly can help people find the unexpressed parts of their personality that are still there. They're just not the tendency, not the most visible tendency. Now, the people map, we call that their Achilles heel. You know, there may be the Achilles heel that you overdo a certain aspect of yourself. Okay, then Maya asks, how does coaching work differently with a shadow than therapy does? How do you take a client there without re-triggering past trauma patterns? You know, we're not looking to re-trigger past trauma. In fact, as I learned certain aspects of therapy before I quit being a psychologist, I never wanted to have my clients re-experience trauma. So I found ways to do it with techniques called EMDR and Ericksonian hypnosis and all sorts of things where we didn't have to re-know the story. We just had to say, okay, now that happened. Now how would you like it to be? And we began, like we do in coaching, to create the life they want. I know that sounds easy and it's not, but the idea is to move into the future that someone wants to create, not to dwell on past trauma, et cetera. Now, if you get somebody that this pops up, that somehow the questions that you've asked or the memories come back, do get a person in a state of agitation, then the next question you ask is coaching still something that you think is going to be helpful to you, or do you feel that you need to get an assessment from another professional? In other words, you're not saying, hey, do you need therapy? But you might say, you know, this seems to have brought up something the last couple of weeks. Do you think it'd be helpful for you to have an assessment with a professional therapist? I've done that lots of times. It's service you can be to your clients to help them know when they might need a referral. And then last question I got pre-sent to me, and then we'll open the phones, Amy. But Phoebe says, this sounds interesting. I have curiosity. What about the presenter's recent experience, if anything, professionally brought these insights to light for him, if he's willing to share? You know, part of, thanks, Phoebe, for that question. Part of the reason that I'm so intrigued by this and the reason I'm writing this book called Emotional Nakedness is the first chapter I wrote is called Stretch Marks of the Emergent Life. My chapter titles are funny, like Your Shadow, Don't Leave Home Without It, Stretch Marks of the Emergent Life. My stretch marks, the times in my life when I felt stretch marks with the metaphor of birthing, you know, birthing a new you or rediscovering parts of yourself, go back as early as age 12 and 13 in my church youth group. I had a youth minister who is retiring actually this year, and I just wrote a short essay to him about how he influenced my life. And we had youth group conversations with ability to help us be more self-revealing without realizing that's what we were doing. He would have us play games like, if you were any kind of an animal, what animal would you be? And then you got to express, well, what caused you to choose that animal? And then other people in the group might say how they see that to be true or not true for you. Something as simple as that taught me the power of finding a safe place with trusted people that you could be more revealing. Now I want to underscore that, because the theme of my book that I'm writing is not that you go around being naked everywhere. You wouldn't do that with physical nakedness either. We do need to protect ourselves. We do need boundaries. We do need to pull the drawbridge up around our moat from time to time. But we also need, I believe, certain people, places, and times when we can share, and here's the underscore part, with a committed listener. We need a committed listener to have what we're wanting to reveal be heard. And I think that's the key. That's really what I think Brené Brown talks about in her book on Courageous Living and others, is don't just keep it in yourself. Don't just keep this awareness of something, but how do you then share it in humanness? Because we are meant to be together. We're not meant to be apart. We are relationship beings. So let me just stop there, and we've got a few minutes left where I can take some live questions or comments from people. If we want to open the lines, and if we happen to get some background noise, we'll have you post or state your question or comment, and then mute yourself again. So, Amy, all right. So, if anybody's got a question or a comment they've been burning to speak, please state your name and ask.
Pat, this is Judy.
Hi, Judy.
I just wanted to make the comment that one of the clients that I'm working with now is in her 70s, and her husband is very ill with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of hesitated from taking her on as a client. But, you know, she's doing this work of what have I dreamed of? What dream have I given up on? And how she might realize that dream in her life now.
Yeah.
Even while she's caring for him. So the value of looking at this shadow side, it's so exciting. And I wanted to tell you it's exciting for her in her special circumstances.
Wow. Well, that's great that you already discovered that. And I think that's also a good example of and the kind of client that I really like to work with now. If I could pick the ideal client for me now, given my 25 years of coaching, it would be people who are working on their living legacy. So I really want to work with people like that woman who are, you know, they've made it, they've got it, they may have challenges in their life like a husband with cancer or some other, but how are you creating and living your living legacy? You know, it's about meaning and purpose, and I think a shadow work is a big part of that. So somebody's doing dishes in the background or something. If you could mute your line or just sit still, that would be helpful. Thank you, Judy. Anybody else?
Thank you.
Pat, this is Patricia Woods. Have you ever come across a situation where the client could not follow the dream? And if so, how did you handle that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes I ask that question and the person may, I don't know. Well, then we just don't go down that road. But if I wouldn't have asked it, I wouldn't have known.
Okay,
so
thank you.
Coaching's never about trying to force someone to go where you think they need to go. It's it's kind of following the doors that they open.
Mm-hmm.
But we can kind of jiggle the lock sometimes.
Right. I like that metaphor.
Well, see, it just came to me in a moment. That's how metaphors come.
Right. By the way, those of you who may not have taken Pat's course on metaphor, it's fabulous.
Yeah, thank you. We'll probably offer that again in the fall, so check your schedule. Yeah.
Hey, Pat.
Anybody else? Yes.
This is Betsy. How do you make it to seem as if when you're doing the coaching that you don't go, that it doesn't come across too much therapy, and it does come across as coaching when you start talking about dreams and shadows and stuff?
You know, I'm just going to think out loud about this because I think it's the energy with which you ask the questions and the positiveness that you relate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think coaching, you know, a lot of times we have to be sensitive and empathetic with our clients. I mean, if something comes up emotionally, like I've had clients whose sons were killed, whose husband died suddenly, I mean, you name it, car wreck, during the course of our coaching, and of course you have to be there for them when that happens. But I think it's the way in which we hold the space that we continue to trust in the resources and creativeness of our clients, and that we just maintain our curiosity as coaches, saying, how can I be helpful? Or what would be most helpful to you now in our relationship of coaching and in this very moment? So, I mean, sometimes something happened in a person's life where we actually stopped coaching, not abruptly, but they needed something else. They needed to get in a grief group, or they needed to attend to their daughter who was very ill, and it just, their focus was not on where we were. So be sensitive, be curious, ask. I always ask, how are we serving you right now? Is the coaching helping? Is there anything we can do differently, et cetera? So I think if you just always do that, and the way to avoid going into therapy is you're trying to normalize their life experience, but you're not going for the drama, you know? I don't know how best to explain that, but it's, I normalize a lot for my clients. In fact, the word emotion, I often say, you know, it's energy in motion. So right now I see you're feeling some sadness or something about this. Where is that energy taking you? That's the best I can do for you now. It's just so unique with every client. But if you maintain sensitivity and curiosity, they'll feel it. And,
thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anybody else? Let me give you one more tip. You can Google this. Some of you probably have known this for years, if you haven't heard of it before, called the Johari window, which goes again back to the 50s, and it's called Johari because two guys named Joe and Harry invented it. That's really true. So J-O-H-A-R-I, Johari window, still very useful today. I've used it in corporate coaching and team coaching, where you have four quadrants of what's known to self, what do others know about you that you don't know, what do you know about yourself that others don't know, and then what's unknown to everybody. So it's like, In our life, as we continue to learn about ourselves, the Johari window of unknown gets a little smaller. So Google that. You can find a chart. You can find something about it. That's another good little toolbox that can be used with clients in coaching. And it is, in a sense, talking about the shadow, because anything that is doesn't have the light shined on it, anything that's undiscovered as of yet, that's what we're talking about. So for those of you signed up for ILCT's Facebook page, I may post things from time to time on my upcoming book, and I'd appreciate your comments. I'm hoping this new agent I'm working with, I never had an agent before because my other books were published by Norton Books, and the publisher just worked with me directly. But this one I want to get out to a wider public, and so be watching about that. And then tomorrow morning, I think Ellen's going to announce this today. Tomorrow morning, I'm actually on Sirius XM Radio with the Doctors Network, and we'll post something about how you can listen to that another time. But it's in a half an hour on talking to a former head of the American Psychiatric Association about what is coaching and how does a client find a legitimate coach versus a fly by night coach. So I think it'll be fun to have a half hour conversation on Sirius XM Radio.
Mm.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here today. I've got another call coming up at 3. It's on an international webinar, so I'm going to get ready for that. But thank you all very much for attending, and I appreciate any comments you want to post.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay.